Please hold the line for the conference host to join the conference or a customer services representative.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Awilco Drilling First Quarter 2015 conference call. My name is Raji, and I'll be your coordinator for today's conference. Throughout the call, your lines will be on listen only. However, at the end of the presentation, you'll have the opportunity to ask questions. If at any time you need assistance, please press star zero on your telephone keypad and you'll be connected to an operator. I'll now hand you over to your host, John Oliver Bryce, to begin today's conference. Thank you.
Thanks, Raji, welcome. Hello, and welcome to Awilco Drilling's Q1 2015 earnings call, as has been said. I'm John Bryce, and with me today is Ian Wilson, our CFO. For those of you who have access to Awilco Drilling's website, during this call, we will be roughly following the Q1 presentation, which is on the website under the IR section. What we'll be talking about on the call then, I will give you some highlights from the quarter. We'll then go on to look at the financial results in a bit of detail. We'll give you an operational update. We will talk about the market, a quick summary, and then a Q&A. Starting with the highlights then, for those of you who have the presentation, this is slide five. Q1 highlights. Well, this was a very good quarter. Total revenue for the quarter, $68.5 million, driving an EBITDA of $52.2 million. This was in turn driven by a revenue efficiency during the quarter of 97.6%. A really good result there. What sits behind that then is an operating cost or an OpEx of $79,800 per day per rig. At the end of the quarter then, Awilco Drilling, our two rigs, a very pleasing contract backlog still in front of us. Firm contract value of $441 million at the end of the quarter. Finally, the last highlight then for the quarter, we are announcing a dividend in respect to the quarter of $0.50. Okay, moving on to the financial results in a bit more detail. Ian, can you walk us through the numbers? Again, for those of you with the presentation in front of us, we'll be going through slide seven and eight. Ian.
Okay. Thanks, John. Yes, the quarter one 2015 results. Contract revenue for the quarter, $67.8 million. That followed on from the 97.6% revenue efficiency. Total revenue, including reimbursables and other revenue, of $68.5 million, and the rig operating expenses of $14.4 million, representing an equivalent to $79,800 per day per rig. Definitely a little bit less than guidance, and we'll talk about guidance in a future slide. The G&A expense of $1.7 million, that includes a $300,000 credit in respect of a reversal of the LTIP provision, and our other categories within G&A expense, quite a few savings that we had for the quarter. Going forward, we'll be guiding in the region of $3 million as we have done in previous quarters. Depreciation, very much in line with the prior quarter. The total expenses for the quarter of $20.8 million, resulting in operating profit of $47.7 million. Interest expense, slightly down from prior quarters as a result of a bond repayment. The other financial items of $400,000, that's a foreign translation loss on the balance sheet revaluations. Profit before tax of $45.1 million. Tax expense of $5.9 million, equating to 13%, resulting in net profit of $39.2 million. Tax expense going forward will be closer to 20% instead of the 13% that we experienced in quarter one. The $39.2 million total income equates to an earnings per share of $1.31, which is in fact our best quarterly performance on a to-date basis. Onto the balance sheet. On the rigs, machinery, and equipment, the additions during the quarter, $4.2 million, and then reduced by the depreciation charge of $4.5 million. Quarter end balance of $250.8 million. And then under the current assets, trade and other receivables and prepayments and accrued revenue relating to outstanding revenue stream at the end of the quarter, that has all since been received, and we have no disputes with any of our clients. Cash and cash equivalents, all cash, $85.3 million at the end of the quarter, and the current tax, number of $53 million. You'll note that is actually reduced from our prior quarter, principally due to the recovery of cash taxes in our overseas companies. So the balance of that receivable will be recovered in the first half of 2016, when the current tax payable, if you look at the bottom of the page, the bulk of that will be payable in the first half of 16, and one primarily offsets the other. So total assets of $435.5 million, and down below, long-term interest-bearing debt of $110 million, with the current portion of the bond being $10 million. We had a repayment during the month of April of $5 million plus $4.2 related interest, and current tax payable, I've already made reference to that. So total equity and liabilities, $435.5 million.
Okay, thanks, Ian. Okay, turning now then to an operational update. So on slide 10 then, if you have the presentation, let's start with the contract status. And Awilco Drilling's current backlog sitting at $410 million of firm contracts. Our two rigs then, the Will Hunter and the Will Phoenix. The Will Hunter is currently on contract with Hess, which is firm until December 15 at a rate of $385,000 per day. The Will Phoenix then is with Apache, and that is about 6 months into its contract with Apache, and it's firm till approximately Q4 2017 at a rate of $387,500 per day. If you are looking at the slides, you can see that the two SPS, the yard stay visits, are shown there. What I would stress is that these dates, in fact, it's showing the Phoenix Q1 16 and the Hunter Q2 16, but these dates can change, and in terms of the Phoenix, may well come a bit forward, but we'll wait and see. So those can change, those yard stay dates. But to recap then, contract status for our two-rig company currently sitting at $410 million firm. Okay, let's look at operational performance during the quarter. This is slide 11. Very, very good operational performance with 98.8% operational uptime, a great result. The OPEX then in Q1, that was lower than guidance, and this was due to a number of reasons which we've touched on, favorable exchange rates, but also very much continued focus on cost discipline. So going forward then with guidance, we're revising our OPEX, our operating cost guidance within the remainder of 15 to guide at somewhere between $85,000 and $90,000 per day per rig. Also under operational performance then, continued positive customer feedback, and I'm very pleased to say that Awilco Drilling was awarded a few accolades during the quarter. One was from Hess, the Rig of the Year Award, and we also secured a couple of awards from the IEDC, International Association of Drilling Contractors, for Best Safety Performance, and the Chairman's Award for Best Rig. So a great accolade, which goes very nicely with our best-in-class operational performance. So very pleased with that. That was during Q1, and all those awards were in respect to 2014 performance. So next topic, this is a topic regularly asked about. This is the upcoming SPS yard stay projects. So let me now give you a quick update on where we are with these yard stay projects. First thing I'd like to say is that we have an experienced project team, and the planning for these projects started, in late 2012. It's the same team that were involved in the original upgrading of the Will Phoenix and Will Hunter. The budget for the SPS project still remains guiding at $20 million per rig. The budget for the new BOPs remains at $22.5 million per rig. The Will Phoenix yard stay is scheduled for late 15 or early 16. As I mentioned, it's currently showing Q1 16, but that could come forward. The Will Hunter yard stay is scheduled for Q2 16. The Will Hunter SPS, if undertaken, will position the rig very well for opportunities potentially in 16 and 17. But there's a but, and the last but is the final bullet you can see on page 12 if you're looking at the presentation, and that is that the Will Hunter yard stay probably will be postponed if no attractive follow-on work is secured. Okay, moving on then to the dividend distribution slide 13, if you have it in front of you. Ian, can you walk us through this slide?
Yes, the board agreed a dividend payable in respect of Q1 of 50 cents per share, and this will be paid around the 19th of June, and the share will trade ex-dividend on the 19th of May. The company's dividend policy, no change there, consistent with the prior quarters. They just caution that future dividends will continue to be challenged by not only the capital expenditure in the SPS, but also the future market prospects. So consistent with what we had prior quarter, and no real change. Obviously, we've reduced the level of the dividend, but the policy remains the same.
Okay, let's change the subject a bit and have a look at the UK market outlook, which is slide 14 and into slide 15. What we can say about the UK market then, it's a continued, there's continued low contracting activity in the UK. During the quarter, there were only three fixtures for floaters in the UK, and these were set at $298,000, $225,000, and $320,000. But certainly, if you're looking at slide 15, that's representative of a cooling market and pressure on day rates. If we look at the UK fleet of floaters then, that's shown on slide 16, the rigs that we compete against, then you can see a change since the last quarter. So this change, looking at the rig fleet then, is a reduction in the number of rigs, and the reduction is due to two units having been scrapped by one of the rig owners. So the fleet in the UK has reduced. And also another change you can see looking at that fleet of the competitor rigs in the UK is that a number of rigs now are cold stacked. So this is where rig owners have opted to reduce their cost exposure to this cooling market. So a slightly smaller fleet and some red dots there on that chart which represent some rigs going straight to cold stack after completing their contracts. Okay then, slide 17, the big picture market comment then. Timing of the return to better times, higher levels of activity. So what are we going to say about that? Well, market uncertainty continues with respect to the timing and the shape of the recovery. Operators in the UK continue with reductions in their current and planned E&P expenditure. There was a change in UK tax regime during the quarter. This was a stimulus put in place by the UK government. It hasn't led to an increase in activity, but we wait to see if it does when oil price rises, but no immediate change in activity due to this very recent UK stimulus put in place during the quarter by the UK government. What we've touched on briefly there when we talked about the supply side in the UK fleet, clearly there's an increased number of available rigs. We see that through 15 and beyond. And also, leading on from that, the lack of current contract opportunities is leading some drilling contractors to cold stack the rigs and, in some cases, starting an attrition program. So that's the big picture. Let's see if I can summarize then the presentation. First of all, this was a very good quarter for Wilco Drilling. Revenue efficiencies during the quarter, 97.6%, and continued focus on cost discipline. So a really good quarter. Wilco Drilling then in response announced a dividend of 50 cents. The company has a solid contract backlog for our two-rig company of $410 million. Clearly, market uncertainty continues with respect to the timing and the shape of the recovery. And finally, Awilco Drilling continues to evaluate market opportunities on a case-by-case basis that would add value. So that's the summary of the call. Let's say thank you for listening, and I'll hand back to Raji for our Q&A session.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you'd like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. If you change your mind and wish to withdraw your question, please press star 1 again. You'll be advised when to ask your question. We currently have no questions coming through. Just a reminder, if you'd like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. We have a question coming from Alexander Stahel from GPS. Please go ahead.
Hi, guys. Alexander speaking. Congratulations again for outstanding operational performance. Well done.
Thank you.
I was just going back to get a better market feeling. You probably remember that I was asking the same questions over the last couple of quarters, but obviously, you know, no one knows, but we can see the changes in your slides over those quarters. And so I was just trying to understand better slide 15. Where at the moment your day rate outlook seems to be, or the status quo of the day rate seems to be for new contracts in the range of about $225,000 per day. Is that a correct statement?
Well, clearly day rates are a function of supply and demand, and also they're a function of the type of rig. So within these filters, yeah, there's standard work and there's more challenging work with deeper water rigs, but you could say spot rate was in that range. Yeah, you'd be too far away from spot rate today.
Would be in that range, okay. And I'm just looking back a little bit again on your slide in 2004 and before that for almost 5 years. The day rate was even significantly lower than that. Was that because we had a different cost structure at the time? Because when I go through your cost structure, and I assume you are one of the more efficient or at least very competitive in terms of cost structure operators, your cost structure seems to be in the range, I hope I get it right, but I think about $150,000, $160,000. Is that about the correct statement?
If you want to blend various costs, yeah, SG&A, OPEX, boring, this kind of stuff, something in that range.
Something in that range. So was there a time when those costs were significantly lower that the day rate has fallen so low 10 years ago, or was that just an even more dramatic demand and supply situation?
There's probably a bit of both, but remember, the cost of labor has gone up significantly in the last two spikes. If you look at the last spike of the last 3 years and the spike that was pre-2008, there was a step change in increase in labor costs. And, of course, we've seen recently this new tax which came in last year, which is employer's tax. We have to pay 14% on top of employment costs. So, there was a wage inflation plus there was a cost hit. General oil field inflationary challenge as well. So I would say it's probably a blend of both, but certainly the basic cost has gone up dramatically since, since the start of the first spike, which would be, take it back to 2005. It was a different world then, basically.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's fair to say that, in those levels, 100K or so, no operator out there would offer services because, they rather shut down.
Well, every operator is different, clearly. I can't speak for our competitors, but that appears to be the case. And if you look at the slide 16, mm-hmm, you'll see that there's 1, 2, 3, 4 rigs have gone straight to cold stack. And those are, and you know, wait and see what the next rigs that do that run off contract. And that is an operator just deciding, I'll take it down to minimum cost and I'll wait till the market changes, rather than, you know, not break the market, but really sort of push those costs all the way down. So I think those cold stack rigs sort of tells its own story.
Yeah, I think so too. Okay, so can you then, staying with day rates, can you, or is there any indication out there for decommissioning work and day rates? Are they different? Do you need less personnel? Is there a different break-even point, or is that just the same, different work?
So the hardware is the same. It's the same kind of rig for your standard decommissioning. It's a drilling rig with a drilling crew. So it's the same kind of rig. And then day rate is then a function of supply and demand. So it would be very much in the same sort of region as conventional drilling work for a similar style rig. What I would say is that Awilco Drilling has got considerable experience in decommissioning and has become a very, very efficient operator, and so much so that we're well ahead of the curve with our current client, Hess. And so that experience and that efficiency will really stand Awilco Drilling in good stead when marketing the Will Hunter for future decommissioning work. I think we have you know, considerable experience, and we've demonstrated that we're very good at it. So even though it's the same hardware and the mark and the day rate is a function of the market, I think we are in a very good position because of our considerable experience compared to you could say the rest of the UK fleet.
Anyway, you would say there is no difference in day rate.
No,
there shouldn't be.
Day rate, but there could well be a preference in which rig is selected due on preference. I would like to think.
Okay. Yeah, makes sense. And then, is there any tender for decommissioning work out there?
No. So currently there is one tender at the moment, which has been widely advertised, which is a one-year firm plus a one-year option starting late 16, and that is for Talisman Sinopec, and that was to start decommissioning some of their subsea wells. So that's just gone from an RFI stage, which is a request for information, and the tender for the work is imminent. So that process has started. So to answer your question, there is one out there, and we hope for more.
And are you responding to that?
Yeah, absolutely. Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Whose client is Talisman at the moment? On slide 16, is it Diamonds or is it kind of Oceans?
Currently, Talisman Sinopec have, I believe, the Sedco 711 and the Sedco 712.
Okay. I given there weren't that many questions before me or no questions before me, I continue asking. So is there any tender out there for drilling work? Exploration work?
Not at the moment, but there were a number of wells planned, small campaign wells which were planned, which seem to have been deferred for various reasons. But we are hopeful that they will all emerge in 16. And there's sort of one or two wells here or there. So, you know, the drilling stuff that what we expected to come out to tender didn't happen. But rather than it disappear completely, we're kind of hopeful this will just move into 16.
And do you know all the clients that are working in the North Sea at the moment? Or can you put names behind those rigs in terms of operator, EMP company?
It's a fairly small client base. So I'd say that most of the drilling contractors know most of the operators and vice versa. So it's, and certainly Awilco Drilling's rigs are well known within the UK industry.
Yeah. I guess my question is, you know, the North American ones, they obviously have to decide, among different fields where they want to put the capital to work. And then there is a break-even calculation and so on and so forth. And by the way, I think, you know, not knowing North Sea in and out, but I pretty much know the numbers for shale and, you know, Africa and other deep sea regions. And, you know, I can imagine you're not that bad in a position. You know, if a CEO has to choose where he puts the capital to work. But I guess my question goes in the direction, there are some European international companies that, you know, are almost exclusively working in Europe, I guess mainly in the North Sea. Are you aware of any work there and any decision making there?
In terms of UK operators making choices to spend capital in other locations? I can't speak on behalf of operators, but clearly some operators have large choices. So, I mean, the UK is a reasonably high-cost environment, but the actual break-even cost ranges dramatically in the North Sea. And when I say break-even, I mean break-even is a combination of two things. It's the capex and the opex. The capex is what it costs to develop the field, the rigs, the infrastructure, and the opex is what it costs you to pump it to shore, basically. So if you add those two things together and then you divide them by the reserves you think you're going to get from the field, you end up with a break-even. So what is the break-even? Well, the break-even varies dramatically in the UK. It varies between company, it varies between fields, it varies between wells. And so there's a significant range from low teens in terms of dollars to, you know, for $100. So there's not, I can't give you a definitive, here's what the North Sea is for a break-even cost, because it's a very wide range, and it varies for all those reasons. But clearly, depending on the operator's specific well versus other opportunities, you know, they're going to be faced with these choices on an ongoing basis. But that's nothing new to the situation they've always been in.
Yeah. But, for instance, EnQuest is an exclusive North Sea operator. I mean, I guess they should come back to the table at some point. Are you aware of that?
Well, it's an interesting company, but I can't really make any comment on behalf of EnQuest. I think they're an opportunistic company, and we're pleased they're involved in the North Sea, but I can't make a comment on what they're thinking, because I don't know.
Okay. Anyway, I guess I'm just trying to find out, you know, who has to make a decision first, and therefore, you know, find out. You know, Hess obviously can drill in so many places. I mean, for them, there is competition between, you know, what's the best break-even to go for the capital.
I mean, most of the majors are in the UK, put it like that. Shell, BP, Chevron, you know, and the rest. So.
Okay. Well, I guess that these were all my questions. Thanks a lot for the overview and good work. Maybe one last question with regard to your capital allocation. Why has the board considered paying back debt instead of paying dividends?
Yeah, I mean, that's something we look at regularly because it has been discounted. It was quite heavily discounted recently, but I see those bond prices have gone up again, so it's not quite as attractive as it was, but it's something that we continue to look at. But in these uncertain times, I think it's, at this moment in time, it's probably more prudent to keep cash in the bank. So.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. So that's why I was actually surprised that you guys still pay dividends, but, you know, who knows, huh? Okay, thanks a lot for the overview and the good work.
Okay,
keep it going.
Thank you.
The next question comes from the line of David Reed. Please go ahead.
Hello, David. Oh. I can't hear you, David. Can you hear us?
Yeah, I'm sorry. I thought I was off of mute. Congratulations on a great quarter. I wanted to get a little bit of further understanding on the Will Hunter yard stay and when on the calendar you're kind of forced to make a decision on it goes in or it doesn't go in, and what does that how much of an impact does that have on future contracts that might come out? That's number one. And number two, if we could just get a little bit more color on the considerations that went into the declaration of the 50-cent dividend.
Sure. Okay, so the Will Hunter, it's kind of drop-dead date is late Q2. So that's why we've pushed it back as far as possible to give ourselves maximum flexibility and the most choices. So that helps us by putting the Hunter back to late Q2. But after Q2, clearly it can't operate without an SPS. So what does that mean in terms of contracting opportunities? Well, it means up until, let's say, the end of Q2, we have the two quarters then that we can try and secure work. It is traditionally a very difficult time to secure new work in the first quarter of the year because of the bad weather and operators' resistance to going out in the bad weather. But regardless, we're out trying to generate some work for Q1 and Q2. And before the SPS, we can be quite creative in terms of contracting ideas, etc. But after that point, we have a slightly different view that if we're looking for a contract, it should be a contract which is sufficiently attractive that makes a meaningful contribution to the SPS. And the reason being is that, let me give you an example. If we do the SPS in the middle of 2016 and it costs us the numbers that are already in the presentation, and then we've done that to simply undertake one well program and potentially sit idle again, that's not sufficient justification for doing the SPS. What we're looking for is something a bit more substantive that can then make a meaningful contribution to the SPS. So that's the thinking behind that. So let's call it the middle of 2016 SPS date. Before that, we can be a little bit more creative with our contracting approach for new work, but after that, any work that comes after that is very much driven by creating some kind of meaningful contribution to doing the SPS and spending that capex. Second one, dividend. Ian, do you want to give us some flavour of any thoughts, or shall I run with
you? No, it's fine. Yeah, the dividend of 50 cents, certainly prior quarters was $1, and our policy states that we have to take appropriate consideration of our working capital requirements and our future capital expenditure and SPS. As we go through this year, we've got a significant amount of expenditure in regard to both of those and the BOPs as well. And the other aspect is that whilst there's a degree of uncertainty with regard to the Bull Hunter, we've got to take that into account when we determine what the dividend distribution is going to be. So really a combination of our upcoming capital expenditure, SPS, BOPs, and the certain degree of uncertainty with regard to the Bull Hunter.
Increased uncertainty is the phrase we've used.
Absolutely. All right, gentlemen. Thanks for your answers.
All right, to David.
The next question comes from the line of Alan Olinger. Please go ahead.
Gentlemen, I have just need some clarifications on your capital expenditures and maintenance capex. As I understand it, every year you have to spend $16 million on both rigs in just regular maintenance capex. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's combined. Yep.
Combined.
For both rigs. Yeah, both rigs.
Okay. Now, the year you do an SPS, do you have to spend the $16 million plus the $40 million for both rigs, or does the $8 million per rig get eliminated in maintenance capex and get rolled into the 20?
No, we'll still have some degree of a capital expenditure. It will be quite a bit less because the bulk of the capex projects will be done during the course of the SPS, but we still have some degree of expenditure in the same year.
But $4 million per rig as opposed to $8 million in the year you do an SPS?
That's a reasonable assessment, correct?
That's a reasonable assumption. Okay. Then, as I also recollect, you have already put some money down on the BOPs, and that there is, according to my notes, roughly $25 million on the BOP due in 15 and another final $10 million due in 16. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's very close. We have, on a to-date basis, spent between 12 and 13 million actually spent on the BOPs. And, the timing with regard to one of the rigs, Will Phoenix, probably spends in the region of 16 million for the rest of this year. For the Will Hunter, a lesser amount of about 7 million. And then the balance of the Will Hunter would be coming through in 16 which would be a further 9 million. So about 32 million in respect of the BOPs still to come through during the course of 15 and 16.
About 32 million in 15 and 16.
Correct.
Okay. All right. So and I can assume that that's roughly, what would be 25 and another 7, something like that, in 16?
Yeah, it's about 23 and 10. Yeah, that's close enough. I guess the key thing is that we have spent, you know, between 12 and 13 million to date. So if those numbers combined, it's pretty equitable between both rigs. But in total, 45 million, which is what we've sort of guided.
Okay. And then in 17, you're going to be back to roughly $16 million a year in maintenance capex.
Yeah.
All right. And in terms of, and then you have to pay another $10 million per year in cash to service the principal on the debt. Is that correct?
That's correct. Yeah. That's for the principal, and then the associated interest.
It's $5 million every
6 months. Yeah.
Yeah. And doesn't that kind of stress your existing cash if you look out a couple of years in terms of your philosophy of keeping a quote-unquote robust cash position?
We have got good cash generation through the course of the remaining part of this year, and absolutely there will be challenges next year when we have the uncertainty regarding the Will Hunter. But our projections through to the end of 16, end of 17, we've got the appropriate cash generation, cash buffer in place to satisfy that.
Okay, but then what would happen is a reduction or elimination of the dividends in those years, depending upon what happens with the Hunter.
That is to be determined on a quarter-to-quarter basis, so it tends not to give guidance with regard to future dividends, and we have that's going to be subject to future utilization, future day rates as well.
All right. Okay. Well, that does it for me. Thank you guys very much. Keep up the good work.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
We have no further questions coming through. Just a reminder, if you'd like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. We have a question coming from Hake Latila. Please go ahead.
Okay. Hi. Thank you for the quarter. I have a question about the Will Hunter. You told me in the presentation that you might postpone the whole SPS. And
yes.
Does it mean in case that if this happens, that you don't have to spend them all the money in the boat what you need and you save the money and you cold stack it the whole rig? Is that the worst case scenario?
So worst case is we don't spend the money, but it's not an elimination of costs. It's very much a deferral until we go back to work again. But let me just clarify one thing. Cold stacking is quite a dramatic move. Because when you cold stack a rig, you're kind of subjecting it to be one of the last out to a recovering market again. And the reason being is because cold stack takes quite a lot of time and effort to get it back to an operating condition. And also from a cold stack position, there usually comes some inherent risks which customers aren't too keen on. So a cold stack rig is usually the sort of last choice to come back to the market. So we would hesitate from saying we would go straight to cold stack. A preferred option would be a warm stack or a lukewarm stack. But you know, whatever we do in terms of parking the rig and not using it, if we don't do the SPS, that is a deferral of cost rather than an elimination of cost, and it may well happen 12 months later.
Yes. Okay, and how about the POPs? In the case of this kind of warm stacking and moving the SPS course to the forward, the future, does it same happen to Bob, or do you have to pay it still in next year?
So, I didn't quite hear you there, but I think you're asking about what's the sort of quantum of worm stacking costs? Is that what your question was?
No, sorry. I was asking that in the case of the postponing the SPS, Can you postpone the payment for the BOP also, or do you have to make the payment for the BOP in 2016 still?
No, the BOP, we've committed to take the BOP. The remainder, the balance of the cost, the SPS cost itself, the $20 million, clearly we can defer that. And there are actually some other sort of CapEx costs which we can defer. But the reason we have elected to take the BOP on time, and that BOP for the Will Hunter arrives sometime in Q1 16, is because that is a very, very long lead item. We had to actually order that more than 2 years ago. So if we went back to the manufacturer and said, look, just hold it, postpone it, there's no guarantee we would get it back where we wanted. So that was seen as too big a risk to a reactivation. So we're taking the BOP, which is a sensible thing, and that keeps all our options open. But in terms of all other CapEx, we defer whatever we can, bearing in mind the trigger date. So we're taking a very prudent approach, but the BOP, unfortunately for that reason, didn't fit into that philosophy.
Okay. That's answers to all my questions. Thank you.
Thank you.
The next question comes from the line of Alexander Sahel. Please go ahead.
Guys, it's me again. Just one last question. Can you confirm you have not been approached by Apache to renegotiate the existing contract, say, a rate for term or something?
I think what I can say is that all operators in the UK are very keen on cost reductions, and we have an ongoing dialogue. But we have a contract in place, and we work within that contract. So, that's where we are.
Okay, understood. Can you just explain for me a bit better what the contract says? In case an operator would decide to walk away from it, is your margin covered, or how does it work?
So, very, very simple terms. We follow a standard UK contract, which is referred to as a crime or a logic contract, and that means that the vast majority is a sort of standard format. And what you do is just add in the day rate, and then you add in the sort of fiddly terms at the end. But essentially what that means is that there is no termination for convenience, and if a customer decides to terminate in a sort of standard crime contract with usually standard terms, then they have to pay the balance of the contract. So you're kept whole for that. But there are also clauses that if you don't perform, there are get-outs. So it's clearly a Wilco Drilling is continuing to perform and make sure we don't get into that position. But there are sort of bad lever clauses which they can use. But essentially, there is no termination for convenience without paying the vast majority of the balance of the contract. When I say the vast majority, it's not a 100% day rate. From memory, I think it's something like the standby rate, which is 95% of the day rate. I think that's common in pretty much most of the client logic contracts in the UK.
And that's under UK law, that contract?
Not under UK law. It's under the standard type of contract, which is referred to crime or logic. That's the sort of pro forma, if you like, and then each party then sort of adds a small print, if you like, so it's quite normal for that contract to follow those terms in the UK. Clearly, other parts of the world, that's not the case, because I'm sure you've read about other regions, people can terminate for convenience.
Yep.
With no cost. But as far as our contract and most contracts in the UK, that's not the case. But again, just to emphasize the fact that for non-performance, there are outs as well, but we're certainly not in that place.
Yeah. But just to understand, the worst case scenario is in case you guys have to go to court with Apache, what's the court? Is it a UK court, or is it a Norwegian court, or what's the jurisdiction?
Well, first of all, I think we have a very good relationship with Apache, so I'm confident we won't be going to court, and I'm absolutely confident we'll continue to deliver very good performance for Apache and keep them happy. But our contract is subject to English law.
English law, okay. Okay, thank you, gentlemen.
Okay.
And the next question comes from the line of Harold Owen. Please go ahead.
Hi guys, and hi Katrine. I'm going to be quick, and I came in a little bit late, so sorry if you already answered this. But can you give some color on the potential warm stack costs on the Whale Hunter? Should we just assume the guidance, or is there any flex there?
If the rig is going to be stacked for any period of time and we take it down to a warm stacked mode, the costs come down to something in the region of $40,000 a day. And if we take it down a step further and have even further reduced crews, then we have a lukewarm stacked position and the cost per day would be in the region of $25,000 to $30,000 a day. So there can be some significant savings over the full operating costs.
Perfect. And you sort of hinted to it when you talked about cold stacking the Whale Hunter, and that's a very bold move, but can you maybe shed some color on the likely reactivation cost if Whale Hunter goes from cold stacking and you guys decide to reactivate it?
Well, the cold stacking per day is somewhere between $5,000 and $10,000 a day for the running cost. That's a lot of it's down to insurance. But the actual cold stacking, there's a preservation cost and there's a reactivation cost, and you add those two things together and you could come up with a round number of about $5 million.
Perfect. That's all for me. Thanks.
Okay, thanks.
We have no further questions coming through. And I hand it back to your host to conclude today's conference.
Okay, Raji, thank you very much for hosting the call. I'd just like to say thank you to all the listeners of Awoka Drilling's Q1 2015 earnings call. Thank you for listening and goodbye.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining today's conference. You now may replace your handsets. Thank you.
Yes, we've done that one.